One can tell from the way Edith speaks that people regard the fairies, or as some people call them, the punts, as an essential part of their everyday lives. Ruth McCauley, Margaret Schweitzer, and Richmond River local Mari Newman share their memories of the fairies.
In my childhood years, I knew it more as a punt. It was always either the quarter to or the quarter past punt that we'd get to go to town.
It always fairy
to me.
Just
governed the life. You had to either go at quarter to or the quarter to or the quarter past punt to come to town, and it was either the half past or the hour that you went home. You know, if you came to town at all, then the only way to get here, get to McLean, was by the ferry. So that you sort of, if you didn't want to wait for a long time, organised your trip to leave so that you'd be there in time to catch the ferry.
Because sometimes it'd take them a long time to walk down and start her up, if they were going to have a smoke or a cup of tea or something like that.
Yeah. And also the Goodwood Ferry was operated with one, or several punt operators, the local fruit and veggie shop. He had local fruit and vegetables on board, and as the people went across the ferry, they did their shopping as well.
That was very handy.
It was very handy. It was always fresh.
Especially to the outlying areas that were a long way from McLean, because you really only came to McLean if you had to do important business in that time. You just didn't come up for the day shopping.
That was another fun thing. When in prawn seasons or good fishing times, the ferry had to come in rather quickly. This is Harwin. And there were quite big bream and prawns, and you'd run down onto the flat and you'd pick up your bream and you'd pick up your handfuls, and we'd just walk home. They don't do it. No.
We used to do that on occasions with the Goodwood Ferry's kids.
Get all these prawns and these nice big bream.
At the particular time of the year, you know, when the prawns are moving.
Dad took us malleting on the hopping on the ferry once with the torches. And in the mullet season. It's called mullet hopping, and people don't believe us about mullet hopping, and I know two fellows who still do it. Do you get a torch and you shine it into the river, and the torch attracts the mullet, and the mullet used to jump up onto the flat as we're going across to Harwood and back again.
We went to live in North Woodburn, which I referred to, and I must have got it from somewhere, as the wrong side of the river, because you had to cross the ferry all the time. You know, whenever you wanted to catch it, it always seemed to be on the other side. And that's what creates these wonderful little anecdotes that I love about the ferry, because all sorts of things happen to people when they miss the ferry, especially men, you know, who go back to the pub for another beer or miss the next one as well. And people used the ferry in all sorts of ways. You had parcels put on the ferry. You know, you would ring up from home and say, give your meat order, and the butcher would run down, put it on the ferry, and then you would walk down to the ferry and collect it.
The Murray River ferries are also warmly regarded by the local community. The ferries continue to provide a convenient alternative route for local residents and farmers to Albury and the Swan Hill, Speewa areas. The Murray River ferries are becoming a popular tourist attraction, as Lorraine Waite reflects.
The ferry is a novelty to tourists, isn't it? People, there's a caravan park about 15 miles down there, a little caravan park on the water. When the weir's up, there's a lot of people. They all just come up just to go across the ferry. I'll get calls from Wagga or Holbrook and that, making sure I'm open, because they just love to come across. The locals fight desperately to keep it. I mean, it's the quickest way to get to cattle markets and that, because they're at Bandiana, and it's necessary, really. Even though there's probably only 20 families, but on this side, I mean, even the ones from Grania, they use it to go to sales across at Wagga or things like that.
Even in Sydney, up until the late 1970s, ferries offered crucial links in the road transport system. Ray Wedgwood recalls his last crossing on the Lugano Ferry in 1974.
We never used to use the Lugano Ferry much, but we used to use it annually when we'd go on our great Christmas tree hunt. And we'd go out on the Lugano Ferry and across up into the area around Lucas Heights and go into the scrub there and had a special saw. We'd fell our Christmas tree and bring it home. And one day we went down to do it, and it just happened to be that was the week when they were giving out the special some special certificate to be the last person to ride on the Lugano ferry.
Brian Pearson, former Department of Main Roads Chief Engineer Bridges, recalls the importance of the Hastings River ferries.
Our ferries comprised the crossings at Blackmans Point over the Hastings River on the Pacific Highway and the crossings at Smithtown, Jerseyville and Kinchula on the Macleay River. All these ferries were subsequently replaced by bridges in accordance with DMR policy. The running of the ferries was done by our employees and not by contract. That's the ferries for which we were responsible on the classified road system. The personnel attached to the ferries are good people, but they always seem to be in strife. If they fell asleep at night, an irate motorist eventually got the ferry across by ringing the bell, quite often a fight ensued. That was not uncommon, and a battered ferry driver would appear in the office next morning and ask for sick leave. For many reasons, including that sort of situation, the department decided that where possible, ferries should be operated by contract.
During the early years of the 1980s, Brian was also closely involved in the federally funded program to replace council-owned ferries with bridges.
One interesting fund that I controlled as the Chief Engineer Bridges was a fund to replace council-owned ferries with bridges. This fund came from federal money. Commonwealth financed the scheme, and it ran for several years, and in that time we replaced quite a number of council-owned ferries with bridges. I had to prepare a priority list of ferries in the order in which they should be replaced by bridges, and various factors were taken into account to prepare this priority list. One was the cost of the bridge. Where only short bridges were required, those ferries were put up in the priority list for replacement. The other matter was the amount of traffic the ferries were carrying. If the ferries were carrying a lot of traffic, then their replacement was of higher priority than, say, a ferry carrying a small amount of traffic. The funds would have finished about the mid-80s. The policy of the DMR regarding its own ferry was definitely to replace the ferries with bridges, as funds permitted. With regard to council ferries, we helped the councils with the federally funded scheme until that scheme finished, and we didn't get as many bridges done as we'd hoped, so replacement was at a slow rate.
Many of the ferries were unable to cope with the increasing volume of traffic during the 1950s and 1960s, particularly during holiday periods. An often remembered occasion was at Harwood in 1954.
And then the delays with the Harwood ferry with the build-up of traffic. You know, for important occasions, like when the Queen visited Casino, the traffic was lined back to the Serpentine Bridge.
Would be that. Probably further than that. It went out to Tabby Mobile.
So we were taught like hours.
Yes, hours.
Oh, yes. 3 hours. Multiple hours. It was the next day. Some of them got home.
And the queue that at Christmas time for the holidays at the Harwood ferry would go back to Farlow's Lane, but because we lived just beyond the ferry on the Amber Road, Mum would drive past there and they'd say, "Get into the queue, don't go away." And we'd just say, "We just lived down there," and that was sort of back at least 3 miles up to Farlow's Lane. And they're going on holidays north.